go off on the weekends and work in school and all that? You're off Margarita. Why did you go to school Monday? Not just looking for a job. Looking for fun for his overseas adventures. Jared is studying. When do you finish it? Africa. Shock is looking for a job. Yeah. All these things can be done in relation to Krishna. This takes a bit of intelligence and commitment and dedication to your hearing and chanting about Krishna. Without that, your life becomes a bit mundane and full of lines. We're trying to train you all to have a firm basis in Shravana Kirtan Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna, and that can form the basis of your life. Hearing and chanting about Vishnu and camaraderie in Krishna consciousness. Not everyone is going to be able to handle ashram life, you know, as a brahmachari for a dream. And it's a bit difficult ashram life if there's not a good ashram leader. So many places there's, especially the brahmachari these days, not adequate ashram leaders, so without an ashram leader, not to speak of brahmachari, brahmachari life is not a value without strong leaders. In that case, it's difficult for those people to have them support themselves from the beginning spiritually. In the ashrams, you learn how to support yourself spiritually if there's a good leader, but of course, not so directed to forming so much for material giving to yourself. It's kind of an investment, you know. It's like put some time in the army and get some skills, and then you leave the army and do other things. So some people will take the ashram, right? They can see it like that. Like the Mormons, they have more than you, they can choose to do 2 years and be overseas missionary, be a minimum. Come back and they go, you know, marry and things their families. And we're seeing more and more Krishna consciousness like that. Only a few persons are going to go all the way in terms of ashrams. But certainly ashrams, if they have a strong leader, leaders, they have great value and then a significant period of everyone's life. But there has to be good leaders.
Therefore, I'm hoping all of you will learn how to make hearing and chanting about Krishna the basis of your life. And we're trying to deal with each of you so that you can apply Krishna consciousness in your own life and stand up on your feet. We're trying to give you all an experience of what it's like to be in a very pure atmosphere. That takes a lot of work, a lot of energy and commitment by the actual core of the law staff. Takes a lot of energy for me too. It's not that this kind of scene with all its various kind of persons can just kind of arise out of nowhere and nothingness. It takes a lot of skillful personnel relations and dealings and like that. So it may look easy to you all now, but it is a delicate balancing act. Handling persons of all different intensities in Krishna consciousness, different levels of desire in Krishna consciousness. You know, water seeks its own level, but at the same time, you want to provide opportunity for the water to rise a bit higher. At the same time, you don't want to artificially push people off their level. So all these things are very delicate. How to give. These days, particularly young men, are problems because they've been so destroyed by society into becoming listless and lifeless and drifting. To get them to be Krishna conscious and to get them to do something for their practical situation is difficult. At most they start thinking, hey look, I'm doing something for my Krishna consciousness, that's enough. What do you want out of me? But now, you have to learn how to take care of yourself materially. If you're not the brahmachari type, brahmachrini type, then you've got to be practical about the future. So, we try to address those things from the beginning. So that some years from now you can't say,
oh, no one ever told me that I would have to work and I would have to take care of myself. I thought I was joining the law that everybody would just take care of me.
Jayo Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari.
Yamuna Tira Manachari
Hare. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Janava Lapa Ye Parijare.
Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 3. Pure devotional service. Text 12. Gyanam,
Gyanam,
Yat,
Yat,
Pratinivritta,
Pratinivritta,
Guna Urmi,
Guna Urmi,
Chakram,
Chakram,
Atma Prasada,
Atma Prasada.
Uta,
Uta,
Yatra,
Yatra,
Guneshu,
Guneshu,
Asanga,
Asanga,
Kaivaya,
Kaivaya,
Sammata,
Sammata,
Pata,
Pata,
Tu,
Tu,
Ata,
Ata,
Bhakti Yoga,
Bhakti Yoga,
Ka,
Ka,
Nivritta,
Nivritta,
Hari Katasu,
Hari Katasu,
Vritim,
Vritim,
Na,
Na,
Kurya,
Kurya,
Yanam yanapratini vritta gunormi chakram.
Yanam yanapratini vritta gunormi chakram.
Atma prasada udayatra guneshva sangha.
Atma prasada udayatra guneshva sangha.
Kaivaya sammatat patastvata bhakti yoga.
Kaivaya samata patasputamati yoga.
Ko nirvrito harikatha suratim nakuya.
Ko nirvrito harikatha suratim nakuya.
Yanam.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That which.
That which.
Ah. Up to the limit of.
Up to the limit of.
Pratinivritta.
Pratinivritta.
Completely withdrawn.
Completely withdrawn.
Guna Urmi.
Guna Urmi.
The waves of the material modes.
Waves of the material modes.
Chakram. Whirlpool.
Whirlpool.
Atma Prasada.
Atma Prasada.
Self satisfaction.
Self satisfaction.
Uta.
Uta.
Moreover.
Yatra.
Yatra. Where there is. Guneshu, in the modes of nature. Asanga, no attachment. Kaivalya, transcendental. Samatha, approved. Pata, path. Tu, but. Atta, therefore. Bhakti yoga, devotional service. Ka, who? Nivritta, absorbed in. Harikatasu, in the transcendental topics of the Lord. Vritim, attraction. Na, shall not. Kurya, do. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord, Hari, is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment and being transcendental. It is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Purport. According to Bhagavad Gita 10.9, the characteristics of pure devotees are wonderful. The complete functional activities of a pure devotee are always engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the pure devotees exchange feelings of ecstasy between themselves and relish transcendental bliss. Who knows that verse? No one knows verses here. You learned verses, Rupert. One of the four key verses of Bhagavad Gita. Very good. Translation. Very good. He's inspiring you to learn verses.
You and Jackie got stuck.
You actually use it, huh? Amazing. Alright. This transcendental bliss is experienced even in the stage of devotional practice, sadhana avastha, if properly undertaken under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And in a mature stage, the developed transcendental feeling culminates in realization of the particular relationship with the Lord by which a living entity is originally constituted, up to the relationship of conjugal love with the Lord, which is estimated to be the highest transcendental bliss. Thus, bhakti yoga, being the only means of God realization, is called Kaivalya. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Vedic version in this connection and establishes that Narayan, the personality of Godhead, is known as Kaivalya. And the means which enables one to approach the Lord is called the Kaivalya Panta, or the only means of attainment of Godhead. This Kaivalya Panta begins from Shravana, or hearing those topics that relate to the personality of Godhead. and the natural consequence of hearing such Hari Katha is attainment of transcendental knowledge, which causes detachment from all mundane topics, for which a devotee has no taste at all. For a devotee, all mundane activities, social and political, become unattractive. And in the mature state, such a devotee becomes uninterested even in his own body. And what to speak of bodily relatives? In such a state of affairs, one is not agitated by the waves of the material modes. There are different modes of material nature, and all mundane functions in which a common man is very much interested, or in which he takes part, become unattractive for the devotee. This state of affairs is described herein as pratinivritta gunarmi, and it is possible by atma prasad, or complete self-satisfaction without any material connection. The first class devotee of the Lord attains this stage by devotional service, but despite his loftiness, for the Lord's satisfaction, he may play the voluntary part of a preacher of the Lord's glory, and dovetail all into devotional service, even mundane interests, just to give the neophytes a chance to transform mundane interests into transcendental bliss. Srila Rupa Goswami has described this action of a pure devotee as nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate. Even mundane activities dovetailed with service to the Lord are also calculated to be transcendental or approved kaivalya affairs. Translation again. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord, Hari, is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Om Agana Trimadandasya Gananjana Shrakaya Chakshunvali Tamina Tasmai Shri Guru Vemana. Who could fail to be attracted? That same question is voiced by Shukadeva Goswami or Pritchard Maharaj in the beginning of the 10th canto. Who other than the butcher could fail to be attracted to talks about Krishna? Nivritta Tarshaya Upagiyamana Bhavausa Dashtotra Mano Virama. Talks about Krishna, they're actually meant for those who are Nivritta Krishna, who are free from material hankerings. Because of material hankerings, you can't sit tight and hear about Krishna. Your head is full of so many desires. Your consciousness is hankering for matter. So actually talks about Krishna are meant for the liberated souls. But at the same time, talks about Krishna, as you hear in this verse today, they result in freeing you from the grip of the modes of nature. I don't know if you all have sometimes felt how this world is an ocean of modes of nature. Anybody ever felt that? Sometimes maybe you have the experience. You can see people just like submerged in these modes. And you see the waves, passionate ignorance. Won't find much goodness. You see lots of passionate ignorance. Even though a person is not a liberated soul, by hearing Krishna Katha talks about Krishna, you will feel relief from being dashed about by these modes of material nature. Therefore, in one sense, talks about Krishna are meant only for the liberated souls. But on the other hand, the only way you become a liberated soul is to hear talks about Krishna. In the neophyte and practicing stage of devotional service, you hear about Krishna under discipline, whether you feel like it or not. I think this is an essential point that you all should understand. Your program for hearing and chanting about Krishna should go on whether you feel like it or not. You're not at the stage yet where you can just say, well, I don't feel like this and that's pleasing to Krishna. Now, in the disease condition, you can't just yet trust your intuition, trust your feelings. That doesn't mean there's no room for feelings in bhakti yoga. To the contrary, bhakti yoga is the perfection of feelings and emotion. But we have to recognize what stage we're at. In the practice stage, you perform devotional service under injunction, rule and regulation. Just like a patient who is sick takes medicine from the doctor whether the patient feels like it or not. It's a great mistake to base your hearing and chanting around when you feel like it or not. It's a great mistake. Maybe in the beginning, the very beginning stages, it's a common thing. Or when you lose your razor-sharp focus and determination, it becomes like that. But it shouldn't be like that. Hearing and chanting about Krishna should go on, no matter what your mood is, no matter what the complexities of life are that present themselves to you. And then gradually, because of that dedication to regulated hearing and chanting, your natural spiritual proclivities will develop. In other words, you're nearing your healthy state. Please bear this in mind, that it's a great mistake to base your hearing and chanting regimen upon how you feel. Oh, I feel like reading today. I don't feel like much like chanting today. No. You'll never get strong in that way. Especially those of you who are involved in the working world, or who will be involved in the working world or school like that, you have to hold tight to a regimen of hearing and chanting. And you notice when you don't, you can really start feeling toasted. Things really start getting dry. And as soon as you regain your regulation in terms of hearing and chanting, you notice you feel jubilant again and refreshed. Then the same thing happens again. You let it slide, you start feeling dry, and gradually you get the hint that, you know, you've got to keep it regular no matter what you feel. And those devotees who are serious, they cling to their hearing and chanting, a regular daily program, as their life and soul. And that's how you make spiritual advancement. You need to crack the grip of the modes of nature. You need to feel that you can crack the grip of the modes of nature. And you do that by regulation, regulated hearing and chanting. So in the beginning, yes, things are a bit footloose and fancy-free. We want people to take up the Krishna conscious process, and we don't hassle them about, you know, so many do's and don'ts and regulation and this and that. We're just happy they're chanting a bit every day, happy that they're reading the books, you know. It's really hard getting people to read a book these days. You know, they just love to just jump around. They haven't... It's amazing how difficult it is to get people to read a book from cover to cover. Their attention span is so blown by video games, computer games, and entertainment. They can't concentrate. So anyway, we're happy in the beginning if someone just starts immersing themselves in hearing and chanting about Krishna, even sporadically. The fact is, however, that as you become more purified, you need to recognize the need for regulation, a steady regimen of hearing and chanting about Krishna. First of all, to protect you from contamination, and secondly, to develop your attraction to Krishna. We want to get away from the notion that Krishna conscious knowledge is just some kind of theory or religious belief. You never get that intimation from Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains transcendental knowledge in very active terms. Have we discussed this before? Jnana Plavena, the boat of transcendental knowledge. When you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross over the ocean of all miseries. That's another one. Another way that Krishna describes transcendental knowledge in very active terms, non-theoretical terms. Yes. Certainly in that verse you see the active potency. But, I mean, give me some examples, just like a boat. A boat is not a theoretical thing. It takes you from point A to point B. So there are other verses like that which convey, you know, in descriptive terms, the active characteristics of transcendental knowledge.
Does knowledge is
Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. Pratyaksha. Sense perception. The Raja Vidya, the king of all knowledge, gives direct perception of the self. It's joyfully performed. What else? Ladies? Really? Yes, it burns. What's the verse? Yes. So like a blazing fire burns. And maybe a Bhagavatam verse, a similar Bhagavatam verse. Blazing fire. Transcendental knowledge burns. It's like a fire, it burns. It's like a boat, it conveys. It gives direct perception of the self. In this verse we're hearing, transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Some of you are starting to be able to sense these waves and whirlpools of the material modes. How to suspend them? Just by hearing and chanting about Krishna. That can happen. Those of you who are serious about getting out of the matrix of illusion, you will have a serious daily program of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Alright, let's get a bit more technical and profound, as I know you all are serious scholars of the Bhagavatam. What canto are you on, Dave? The second canto. And Stu? Alright. Jared? You have Bhagavatam? Okay. Alright. Denver. First canto. Alright. How to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the point of transcendental knowledge. All the Vedic literatures are divided into three categories: sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Sambandha means understanding your relationship with the Supreme Lord. Abhideya means acting in that relationship, and prayojana means attaining the fruit of that relationship. Even in ordinary affairs, you can see perversions of that. You try to understand a relationship with somebody, establish it, then you act in that relationship, and you hope for the fruit. The perfection and the proper application of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana is, of course, in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything in the Vedic literature is aiming for these three things. How to understand I'm Krishna's servant, how to act as Krishna's servant, and how to attain the fruits of acting as Krishna's servant. What is the fruit of acting as Krishna's servant? Love of Krishna. There are three great riches in life, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains. Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna. These are the three great wealths. So look in your life and see if you have these things. Krishna, love of Krishna, and Krishna's service. You may not see what you call love of Krishna, but if you have something you're doing for Krishna, some sacrifice you're making, that's the preliminary indication of love of Krishna. What do we mean when we say that you can only attain Krishna by devotion? Prabhupada writes here, thus, bhakti yoga, being the only means of God realization, is called kaivalya. Some of you might have known this term kaivalya, used only in reference to impersonal liberation. Kaivalya means liberation. However, impersonal liberation is just a diminished understanding of that term. Real liberation means engagement in Krishna's transcendental loving service in your original constitutional position. That's also stated in the Bhagavatam, later in the same canto. Mukti hitvandhitharupam Swarupena Vivastati. Mukti, liberation, means to be situated in your natural, original form. Situated in your natural swarup, your natural position, your nature. in loving Krishna. Mukti, liberation, kaivalya, doesn't mean abandonment of individuality, form, and qualities. No, it means reassuming your original form, qualities, and relationship with Krishna. What are the other methods of self-realization apparently described in the Vedic literature? What is all that for? Jnana, karma. Meditation. Karma, as you know, that's fruit of activity, which, when performed with a Vedic injunction, pleases the demigods and provides you with good karma. That's not transcendental. Jnana, however, involves knowledge beyond the modes of nature. Jnana means metaphysical speculation. What is real? What is not real? What is Brahman? What is eternal? What is not eternal? That kind of philosophical understanding, and don't worry, you won't see it these days, when properly done, will take you past Maya to the impersonal Brahman. The effulgence of Krishna's body. But no further. You cannot get any further by Jnana Yoga. Yoga of mental deliberation in terms of metaphysics. But it is possible. You should know, although you won't see it these days, it is possible by extraordinary intellectual powers to understand that you are spirit soul, you're not the body. And to understand there must be an all-pervading spiritual energy. It can be done by mental prowess, intellectual capacity. There are some Western philosophers who were approaching Jnana Yoga, some aspects at least. Certainly Socrates. What's another one? Yeah, okay. Yeah, sort of. He's bit, yeah. Yeah, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Another one, the German Hirsch, what is it? No, not him. Hirsch, a G? No. He was approaching Jnana. Might be another one. Sometimes Jung. Mm-hmm. There's another German, I can't remember his name now. So, their intellectual powers, from the Western point of view, were very highly developed, and they tried to figure things out as far as they could. Real Jnana Yoga takes austerity and purity, so that your intellectual powers are very great. And with those great intellectual powers, you can understand that you are not the body. And you can understand it's the all-pervading spiritual energy. That'll bring you to Brahman realization. But you will not understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then is Jnana Yoga, meditational yoga. By stilling the mind and training the breath and performing rigid disciplines, for a long time, longer than what a lifespan in the age of Kali allows, you can get a glimpse of the super soul in the heart, Paramatma realization. But you will not understand Govinda. Only by bhakti, transcendental loving service rendered to the Lord, can you understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahman effulgence is coming from Krishna's body. Even ordinary entities in material bodies have a bit of an effulgence. People sometimes say it about devotees, they're shining. Did any of you ever think that when you first saw devotees, these people look shining? Yes. You thought there's some special glow around them? Now you just treat them like, come here, Prabhu. But in the beginning, wow, who are these people? Anyone else? You thought that? They're shining. Yes, devotees are very beautiful. Their faces decorated with tilak, and even devotees don't know, but because of their purity, because they strictly follow the regular principles and they're hearing about Krishna and trying to serve Krishna, they have that effect. maybe you'll notice sometimes you're walking down the street and you're just, you know, you're thinking to yourself, and then somebody is driving by, they smile at you or they wave at you or something. Yeah. Sometimes people, they look at you, like they can tell there's something different. Especially if you're wearing clothes as a devotee. Has that happened to any of you? Maybe. No? Now, sometimes I'm walking down a quirky place and I don't... Unconsciously, I'm just start thinking about something about Krishna. When I say unconsciously, I mean just... after I really planned it, and then I don't really get really caught up in it. And then somebody's driving by in a car and honks the horn, and you don't even know the person. They're just, you know... they're just kind of like... they're like... happy to see that, you know, someone is happy. Really, they're very happy to see that somebody's really happy. And because they're non-envious, they're shy, of course. They do it from afar, but it shows they're non-envious. Other times you can meet, I don't know if it's happened to you, but you can meet someone who senses your devotional fragrance and immediately gives a demoniac reaction. That's happened to some. Like, you know, so hollering and screaming at you, and for no apparent reason. So, devotees are beautiful, and their beauty is coming from purity. What destroys beauty? You'll never guess what destroys beauty. The very thing you think is so closely involved with beauty actually destroys it. Who knows? Love destroys beauty? And you mean lust? Yes. We've got to be a bit precise here, Jared. Bhakti is all about love and beauty. Real love and beauty. But what destroys... we're thinking that beauty and passion go together. If you see something beautiful, then there should be passion. How many of you have ever dreamed that the passion and the lust destroy the beauty? I hope you don't have to see it, but unfortunately you will. If you see devotees who have given up their strict Krishna conscious behavior, you see their effulgence has gone. They look flat. But devotees who strictly follow, they have this purity, they're emanating. Because their beauty is not destroyed by passion. It's a very interesting point. Please meditate on it. You can't have the two things together, beauty and passion. It's amazing. You think totally the opposite. There's beauty, there's passion, it's all there. No. As soon as there's passion, there's no beauty. Can't you see that? Just looking at the young people today. When I say young, I mean under 20 years old. A 14-year-old girl looks like she's 19 or 20 or 21. There's no beauty of youth anymore because it's all been destroyed by illicit sex life. That innocence of youth is immediately destroyed by illicit sex life. That freshness of the teenage years. Immediately destroyed. This whole culture is pushing everybody. As soon as you see a trace of beauty, jump on it. That's life. As soon as you see anything attractive, be passionate. They never get it. They can never see. That destroys the beauty. But just look at the young girls, particularly. It takes a toll on them. The men, of course, it destroys them too, but it's a different kind of effect. It destroys their brains. The men become totally spaced. Just lifeless. And it also destroys their health. They never know that, though. It makes them weak. And very difficult to concentrate. The women... the young girls, they actually lose their beauty. This is what the women's magazines never tell them. By doing this, you'll lose your beauty. A magazine wouldn't sell a copy. Can you imagine picking up a women's magazine, New Zealand women's magazine, headline article, illicit sex will destroy your beauty. All the copies would be left on the news rack. On the news there. And that's a fact. Very interesting point. Please meditate on it. Passion destroys beauty. When you become free from lust, you actually become very attractive. If you've ever gone to a sauna or a steam room, and when you use mustard oil before you go in, you come out, you actually, and you take a shower, your skin is shining. That's a physical thing. But you can also shine because of the cleanliness of your life. Devotees sometimes don't realize the great assets they have and how much their lifestyle is so beneficial. In the beginning, you can see it. But after a while, you may become familiar and not take these things seriously. Real beauty comes from sense control. Just tried to tell a lady today that her real beauty is shyness. I can't understand it. Even if they wanted to, can't understand it. Real beauty is when you project everything. Put it all up front. That's real beauty. But it's unavoidable. This horrible advertisement they have on the streets, I think going past the Tate Modern Museum, let the games begin. Oh, horrible things. Unfortunately, you can't miss it. That's what people think is beauty. Project it all. They have no idea. That destroys beauty. Rajagun motor passion affairs, they sap your life's energy, they destroy your beauty, whereas a pure life makes you very attractive. Your whole existence becomes a very sweet fragrance. And people are attracted to that. How do you live like this? What do you do? They become attractive. Because of purity. We say purity is the force. Purity is attractive. We should deliberate about these things. How passion destroys beauty. Because our natural tendency in this world is when we see something beautiful, we want to enjoy it. Ah, yes, this should be mine. I should get my hands on this. It's beautiful. Instead, we should think this beautiful thing should be offered to Krishna. You see, it's not actually that the material world is Maya. It's our misuse of the material world that's Maya. When you think like that, you can put the blame more squarely on your own shoulders. Not exactly that the material world is Maya. It's our misuse of it. Then again, it is true. The material energy is beckoning you to misuse it. Did you know that? So in one sense, it's not that the material world is Maya. But in another sense, it's beckoning you to misuse it. And the misuse is Maya. So because it's beckoning, come misuse me. That's the problem. It's Krishna's energy. But it's Krishna's energy acting in a way to allure you. Come misuse me. And the misuse is Maya. We have to get into the habit of seeing that things are meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. Then you feel the suspension of the modes of nature. When you start trying to use everything in Krishna's service. In the beginning, I'll tell you, even if you feel some desire for exploitation, some desire for passion, if you still go ahead and engage that thing in Krishna's service, you'll become purified. That's the wonder of bhakti yoga. We don't lock ourselves in the room and cover all the windows and just cringe in a corner every time we feel material desires. We have things to do for Krishna. And even though you may feel some tendency to misuse material nature, simply by using things for Krishna's pleasure repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly, the modes of nature die down. That's the best way to deal with the attacks and the modes of nature. Take what you're attracted to and use it in Krishna's service. you'll become purified. That's real renunciation. You're attracted to music? You can't do anything else except music? Okay. Use that music in Krishna's service. This is the wonder of bhakti yoga. We don't turn our back on the world. We use the world for Krishna's pleasure. Now you have to be careful about that, because you can't bite off more than you can chew. Therefore, bhakti requires direction. You can't just say, oh, it's not really Maya out there, it's our misuse of it, therefore let's just, you know, go to the most degraded places and try to engage them in Krishna's service. You have to be careful. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Therefore, guidance is required in bhakti yoga. Someone has to tell you, oh, that's a bit much, or you're just not ready for that now. I think I told you about when we used to do drive-in movie theaters on book distribution. I told you about that. That was a bit trying sometimes. You don't have those theaters in New Zealand, right? But, you know, generally, as I explained, people would go to drive-in movies, you know, not so much to watch the movie, but to carry on in the car. And so there you are, you know, little brahmachari going from car to car, 11:30 at night, you know. You knock on the window, you know, and, you know, the person will roll down the window and really drop in a pack of incense and a Krishna book. And, excuse me, we're just, you know, making the rounds tonight. The management asked us to approach everyone and, got a nice book and some incense. Can you give a donation? People were so shocked half the time. They just, you know, quickly pull out some money. And, you know, and from time to time you would have to kind of look the other way, you know, because, you know, what was going on inside the car wasn't, you know, very Krishna conscious. After a while we realized this wasn't very conducive for devotional growth. But in the beginning days, you know, everything was pretty wild and wide open and enthusiastic. So I remember, as I told you, I knocked on one window and quickly went away. And then the guy, a few minutes later, got out of the car and started following me around. And, you know, he caught up with me. Do you realize what you just did? Do you realize what you just did? Oh, I'm sorry, I disturbed you. You know, he just kind of, without even saying it, his whole demeanor implied, for months I've been trying to land this girl, and then right at her most submissive moment, you appeared and knocked on the window and wrecked the whole night. So he kind of just communicated that to me all in an intense glare, and he grabbed me by the shoulders and threw me on the ground. So, that's an example of a situation that's a little difficult to engage in Krishna's service. Tamagun and Rajagun, you have to be careful. He used to do things like that. For example, you don't have such big... What's your biggest arena hold in New Zealand?
The stadium down here has 350,000 people.
350,000 people? No way. That's the population of Wellington.
35,000
people. 35,000 people. All right. Yes, so in the States, during the big rock music days, they had these big arenas, indoor arenas, that held like 25,000 people. And we would go do book distribution at the concerts. You know, that's when they had the big name bands touring the world, and so. And these arenas, you know, they have these huge bathrooms, you know, like 20 stalls and, you know, like that, situated everywhere. So before the concert starts, all the young people are pouring in, like 25,000, and the first place they're going to is the bathroom to, you know, not simply relieve themselves, but, you know, take their various chemical inducements. And so we would just get to the concert early, you know, go in and just wait in the bathrooms, you know, with our book bags and our books. The guys would come in and go right for the urinals, and we'd say, hey, how you doing? Or they're heading for the, you know, stalls, you know, use a toilet, we just stop them right before they go in. we just stand there for like an hour inside the bathroom distributing books, you know? And then once the concert started, we go out, up and down the aisles. So, it's certainly an unclean atmosphere. Concerts, that wasn't so bad, the bathrooms, I mean, I don't know if I'd do it now, but stand in the bathroom for, at what hour, you know? But, drive-ins, definitely, too much to bite off. You have to be careful about that. Not that now I'm a devotee, I can be transcendental. I can do anything, and I'll use it in Krishna's service. Now, you have to be mindful that you're coming out of contamination and you can very easily get sick again. That's why performing devotional service is like shaving razor's edge. One false movement of the razor, you cut yourself. Of course, ladies don't shave, do they? That's an appropriate ladies' example. It shows things require care. Really? No. They don't shave their mustaches, do they? No, they shave their limbs, huh? I guess I never noticed. Fortunately, our ladies' limbs are covered, so. Well, maybe, you know, I know they have these things they stick up their noses to get the hair out from inside their noses. Don't they have these special raised nose hair trimmers they put up their nose? Yes, isn't that so? Yes, it is. Guys aren't with it. I don't know if one false move of that thing and it cuts you. In any case, you have to be careful in Krishna consciousness. Don't be whimsical. Care is required. You don't have to be a fanatic, but you do have to be careful. You have to understand that you're coming out of material nature and you're regaining your health, and so you protect your health. If you've ever been sick before, you know the first few days or week after you're recovering from the flu, it's a bit of a dodgy time, isn't it? And you're very careful. Oh, I don't want to get that again, you know, I don't want to relapse, I want to get enough rest and all those kind of things. Similarly, coming out of Maya is like that. You've got to be practical. You don't want to catch the disease again. And even when you feel solidly established in health, still, you have to take care because you're living in this material world. There's nothing wrong with having a healthy fear of Maya. But you won't get that unless you can see the difference between Maya and Krishna. And that will come by hearing and chanting about Krishna. What we're trying to develop here is a sense of self-preservation in the right way. You couldn't preserve yourself and protect yourself before because you didn't know what the self is. But here we're trying to encourage you to be concerned about yourself. And that means to be concerned about Krishna. Because, of course, Krishna is the self of all selves. Who knows the lila in Krishna's pastimes where you can see that Krishna is the actual beloved, the self of all selves. That takes the shape. He becomes them. Yes. When Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys, Krishna replaced them all with expansions of himself. Vishnu Tattva, direct expansions of himself. Not living entities, jiva, but supreme personalities of Godhead. Krishna took the characteristics of each calf and cowherd boy. Not only their physical characteristics, but also their demeanor, their behavior. And then, after Krishna had done that, he and his cowherd boyfriends and the calves marched back to Vrindavan. And actually, what was going on? Krishna's marching with himself. They're no longer part and parcel cowherd boys and calves. They are all direct expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are Godhead. So Krishna is, he came through the forest in Vrindavan with his parts and parcels, calves and cowherd boys. Now he's leaving the forest of Vrindavan, going back home with a herd of himself and a bunch of himself as friends. This is Krishna. What mystic potency.
Krishna is the master of all mystics. BBT is just, they're asking me to write some book about Krishna, the master of all mystics. Yes, you can see that in his pastime. He is coming home with a herd of himself and a bunch of friends who are himself. Now, what was going on in Vrindavan before this? There were the older gopis. There's Mother Yasoda. She's raising Krishna and Balaram. Actually, even though Rohini is there, Balaram's mother, still Mother Yasoda was more affectionate to Balaram than even Rohini. Therefore, when it was time for Krishna and Balaram to come home for lunch and they wouldn't come, they were playing with their friends, Mother Rohini tried and failed, so she told Mother Yasoda, you go, because they like you even more. Now, in the forest of Vrindavan, actually in the town of Vrindavan, what happened? The older gopis all had children, but they liked Krishna better. Naturally, they were more affectionate to Krishna than their own sons. They had their own sons, of course, and they would treat their own sons nicer than other people's sons, other mother's sons, but Krishna, they treated nicer than their own sons. Now what happened when Krishna came back from Vrindavan with the expansions of himself as calves and cowherd boys? The calves went straight for the stalls, and the mother cows saw these calves coming, and they just went into pure delight. Again, licking the bodies of the calves and treating them with such affection because the calves were Krishna. And the cowherd boys, when they approached the home, their mothers, they embraced them and lifted them on their laps and began to feed them their breast milk. And the boys were actually Krishna. So in this way, all the mothers, both cows and humans, in Vrindavan got a chance to have Krishna as their son. Because sometimes the other older ladies in Vrindavan than Mother Yasoda, they would think, if Krishna was my son, I would love him just like Mother Yasoda. So they were desiring like that. And Krishna, he gave them a chance. All right, you say that if you were my son, if I were your son, you'd love me just like Mother Yasoda. Now I will be your son. So each older gopi and each cow had a chance to have Krishna as her son, as her cat. This went on for a whole year. Even Balaram couldn't see what was going on. What was happening? Now, every mother was treating her son with the same love that she would treat Krishna with, because their sons were Krishna. Before, you would see a difference. They would be more affectionate to Krishna than even their own sons. Now, they're treating Krishna the same as their son. Furthermore, before, the gopis, their own sons, they would treat special from the sons of the other gopis. That's natural for a woman to do. But now, everyone began to treat all their sons equally. Whether it was a son of the mother or the son of a neighbor. Why? Because all the sons were Krishna. You can imagine what a scene this was. Even Balaram couldn't catch what was going on. But when did Balaram begin to figure it out? Almost a year later. This shows that Ekala Iswara Krishna Asabhavritta Chaitanya Charitamrita says Krishna is the master of everyone, even other portions of Godhead, other expansions of Godhead. Balaram was watching one extraordinary scene. Who knows the scene? The cows were on top of Govardhan Hill.
the calves that were Krishna were at the bottom of Govardhan Hill. By that time, the cows had had even younger calves. So naturally, the milk and affection of the cow is for the youngest calf, not the older ones. But the older ones were Krishna. So the calves looked down from, the cows looked down from Govardhan Hill and saw the older calves, which were Krishna, and began running down Govardhan Hill as if their front and back legs were joined together and their tails were straight up in the air. They were actually running towards Krishna. And they reached the older calves and they allowed the older calves to take all their milk, even though they had brand new calves. Naturally, the cowherd men were feeling angry because this is a failure for a cowherd man that all the milk is taken by the older calves and there's nothing left for the baby calves. They were feeling frustrated and angry. But then what did they do? They saw their sons, who are actually all Krishna, and they became overwhelmed with affection for their sons who had been hurting these calves, and they forgot their anger. So Balaram is watching all this, this phenomenal scene of everyone going mad over love of Krishna and treating all these calves and boys like they were Krishna, the same kind of affection, because they were Krishna. So Balaram began to wonder, what is this? Is some witch bewildering me? No, I'm Balaram. It's not possible. Some kind of demigod bewildering me? What's going on? And then he understood, this is Krishna doing it. Even I could not detect it. And Krishna took him aside and explained the whole situation to him. By this, you can see that Krishna is the actual self of all the selves, and that's what we are attracted to. Prichit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami, how is it that these residents of Vrindavan love Krishna more than their own self? So Shukadeva Goswami explained that actually Krishna is the self of the self. He explained it in a progression. Shukadeva Goswami first explained, everyone is attracted to their body. Why? Because the soul is there. They're actually attracted to the soul. But in ignorance, you take the body to be important. Everyone is attracted to things in relation to the body, other things and people. Still, that's all expanded false ego, extended objects of the self. Whether it's your nation, you're going to give your life to your nation. I always told you about that famous hero of the American Revolutionary War against England. And he was a spy on the British. They caught him. And before they hanged him, they asked what his last words. Every school child in America has to learn this. His last words before he was executed. He said, I only regret that I have just one life to give for my country. So, still he's sacrificing for himself. He's seeing the country as an extension of himself. It still counts as false ego. Selfishness. Even such an apparently selfless act as that is very selfish. My country. I'm giving my life for me. This country is me. Same with family. Whatever. Mundane relationship. You're sacrificing for yourself. But in other words, you're projecting yourself outward. These things are all projections of your ego. And you're sacrificing for those projections, which means you're sacrificing for yourself. Without the soul in the body, there's no life. So you're actually attracted to the soul. And then, the soul is there with the super soul. You're actually attracted to the super soul. But Krishna is the soul of even the super soul. So you're actually ultimately attracted to the supreme soul, to Krishna. Because Krishna is the soul of you. So once you get past all the bodily stuff, all the extended self-interest stuff, you'll get to the soul, and then you must get to Krishna, because Krishna is the soul of the soul. You like yourself, most of the time. That's because you like Krishna. Krishna is the soul of yourself. To reach the soul of the self, that's only done through bhakti yoga. Not jnana yoga, not jnana yoga, meditational yoga, only through devotional service. And you reach the soul of all souls, the attractive center of all attractiveness. Any questions? Remember, that talks about Krishna suspend the modes of material nature. Free you from the whirlpool activity of the modes. It's not religious belief or theology. Very boring theology. It doesn't do anything for freeing you from the grip of the modes of nature. The talks about Krishna do that. And they're very pleasing to the mind, these talks about Krishna. Nivrittatarsat upagiyamana dhavausadachotram manobirama. Manobirama, very pleasing to the mind. It's like the moon rays are pleasing to the mind. Who could fail to be attracted? Only the butcher. Someone who's killing animals or slaughtering himself cannot be attracted to the glories of Krishna. There are people hell-bent on destroying themselves. They just don't care. That's actually envy of the self. We were talking about this last night, weren't we? It was hard for people to grasp. It's like, I want to snuff out my own spiritual identity. It's unconscious. They don't know anything about their spiritual identity, so they can't be conscious about it, but you can see it. I'm just going to ignore the fact that I'm spirit-soul. I'm just going to just merge into passion and ignorance. It's envy of the self. I'm not going to let any of my actual spiritual nature shine through. It's envy of the self. It may take you a while to see that. Some people, they just make these decisions. They're just going to block themselves out with passion and ignorance. That's envy of the self. In no way will I let the glories of the soul shine through. I'm going to accumulate so much darkness. It's envy of the self. Violence against the self also. Yes. I practice. Be compassionate and you'll become more and more expert at being compassionate. You have to start somewhere. Just the fact that you're trying means you're right, so you can just be more expert about being right. Be compassionate and learn the skills how to be effectively compassionate. Anything? Yes. What's the two definitions of a butcher? Yes, they're killing themselves. They are butchers. Don't you see these young people in New Zealand just waste their lives? Maybe a friend you met on the street.
Yeah, I come from the same town as Dylan. And what do you do?
Uh-huh.
I'm on the dole and skateboard.
Are you going to be doing that all your life?
Yeah, I hope so.
Killing the self. Even materially, it's ludicrous. Even from the material point of view, that's the deadly part of the mode of passion. Excuse me, mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is so perverse that it doesn't even make sense from the material point of view. The essential material point of view is mode of passion. You gotta work to get things, get your desires. mode of passion is totally bewildered, even from the material point of view.
Yeah, sure. Skateboard all my life and be on the dole all my life, of course.
Can you imagine? How old is he?
24!
Can you imagine that? It's abominable, isn't it? But he felt quite comfortable and felt good about himself. A 24-year-old man, and his only aspiration is to stay on the dole and skateboard all his life. This is a social disaster. That's butchering the self. From the material point of view, most people would recognize, oh, this guy's going nowhere, he's ruining his life. So even a materialist can see he's slaughtering himself. And of course, we see from all points of view. Even the materialists who say he's butchering himself, we can see that they're butchering themselves. Anything else? So some people don't mind not having their own space. Ashram life is like that. You don't have your own space, and it's very simple, and some people can't function like that, but they still can become Krishna conscious. Also, ashram life, as I said, requires good leadership. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You actually have to be stronger to look after yourself. It can be done. You have to be stronger. Ashram life has its advantages when there's a strong leader. And even though most people won't stay in an ashram all their life, still if there's a strong leader, it's a very vigorous program. It's a very memorable stage of their life. But it's not that automatically just, moving into a so-called ashram solves a problem, because often they're not strong leaders, and then it's actually not very conducive to space out. What are you guys laughing at? Share the humor. So, what we're trying to do here is prepare you all so you can be all that you can be. And you can't blame anyone. That's why we don't allow anyone just to hang out here. They have to be progressive spiritually and materially. No mode of ignorance. 24-year-old skateboarders, we don't we don't allow that. Take responsibility for yourself. Have some program for yourself. Most devotees will marry. Anyone here have any doubts? Of course, we have Nathan Brahman, sorry, but anyone else? You think you're going to be lifetime without a female companion or a male companion? No one's got any plans for that. Roberto, you got plans for that? Shukadeva Goswami. Denver? Denver just likes his music. Satya? So we're dealing with that reality that sooner or later people pair off. So that means you have to be responsible. Sometimes in the name of brahmachari ashrams or brahmachari ashrams, irresponsibility can be perpetuated if there's not a strong leader. And also someone watching to see it's about time that you start preparing for your family life.
So we're trying to provide a situation here in which people, while they're preparing for family life or entering into family life, they can learn how to be strong in Krishna consciousness. It takes a lot of energy and guidance to keep this afloat. And some, when they enter the family life, they'll still choose to be very actively engaged in missionary activities. So we're trying to show that example also. There'll be different types. Some families will want a high level of intensity in missionary activities. Others will want a more traditional, laid-back home life. It takes all types. Anything else? Dave, no questions?
Hare Krishna.
24 years old. I thought he was 21. That's bad enough. 24 is horrendous. What do you think? It's a tragedy. And he had no inclination that, you know, anymore. Yeah. I'm here, I'm on the go, and what do you do? Skateboard? Can you do that all your life?
I hope so.
Tragedy. Really all about skateboarding? Do you have a certain place they go to? Oh, yeah. We all congregate. They just stay all day long, just do stunts on the skateboard. And talk. How do they do that? You can't be intoxicated at the same time, can you? Horrible. So maybe like they skateboard during the day and smoked dope at night. It's a tragedy. Social tragedy. Either the video games, the computer games, sort of them, or the skateboard, or mode of ignorance. Refuse to face up to even material reality that they have to take care of themselves. I saw one on the Courtney Blake. And so, the ladies wonder why there's a shortage of qualified husbands. How do you understand that?
If you want to marry the prettiest skateboarder? So that is my
reason. What have you done?
What have I done? My dear, I've got skateboarding for
10 years straight. Thanks, but no thanks.
What are you going to do? Well, I thought you and I could skateboard together the rest of our lives. I've got a skateboard built for June.
Well, therefore, I guess you have the new ways of power and strength. Well, I'm in charge of all this. Let the men sort themselves out. They may not. Meanwhile, we're doing our thing, right? If a good one actually comes along, we might consider it. You can't just be good. You've got to be, you know, avatar. We might consider it. Otherwise, you know, anything less than A minus, forget it. Let these guys sort themselves out. You know, we got better things to do than put up all this. Yeah. Even the sense delegation isn't worth that much. Yes, this is. What's going on these days? Some of these guys
They have girls like that too who skateboard? Or there must be a corresponding they skateboard is to hang around skateboarders, right?
Pretty much.
They know all the talk, right?
They read all the magazines.
They read all the magazines. They watch, right?
Oh, no. That was a good...
Whatever. And the guys just pass them around from one to another, right? That's even worse. Courier skateboarder, and then... Can you imagine yourselves being a skateboard girl? Skateboarder's groupie? What can be worse? That's the whole thing, you know, they just... Learn how to read all the magazines, drop the language, just hang out in that spot over there.
Yeah, there's not even much involved in that skateboard, it's going to party there.
You know, oh, it's party.
So they have the lingo, so they're not staying.
And so after, at night, they have parties. So it's a whole, like, cult based around the skateboard.
Pretty much.
So it's, like, just a way of people associating, huh? Get a lonely night.
Can you imagine?
Hey, real life as a skateboard group. Hanging out in the park there, you know, after you get the latest magazines. Everyone just waits to hear where the party is, huh? They just, boys and girls, just jump from one to the other like monkeys. They talk about it the next day, right? Trash each other out. Horrible. Disaster. This is social disaster. And then we take these kind of persons and try to straighten them out. And if